Douglas Murray's recent book called The Madness of Crowds has been republished with certain additions during the 2020 pandemic and all other political events that happened. In case you don't know, the subtitle of the book is Gender, Race and Identity. It deals with the identity politics of the current times, what we see around, especially in the virtual world, I would say. How new groups are being formed and politics is being organized along these lines, along identities of gender, along sexuality, along race. And while you may think, I don't know, some critics have said so, that it's just an outright bashing of any kind of identity politics. But I think the author has been much more careful with that. He's picking all these issues one by one, chapter by chapter, and then breaking it down for the normal reader who does not understand what's going on in these areas. And it makes actually quite an interesting read. And even if you disagree with some of the points, I would say it would educate you on certain subjects which you see in the news but don't really understand that much, or especially when you don't get the other side of the argument. And where exactly is the conflict? So if there is a conflict of argument, let's say in terms of Black Lives Matter, you might wonder why there is an opposition to it. So it kind of brings the argument of both sides in these difficult issues and tries to make sense of it. So I'm going to read the first few passages of this book, and that'll give you some idea what it's all about. So let's go. We are going through a great crowd derangement, in public and in private, both online and off. People are behaving in ways that are increasingly irrational, feverish, herd-like, and simply unpleasant. The daily news cycle is filled with the consequences. Yet, while we see the symptoms everywhere, we do not see the causes. Various explanations have been given. These tend to suggest that any and all madnesses are the consequence of a presidential election or a referendum. But none of these explanations gets to the root of what is happening. For far beneath these day-to-day events are much greater movements and much bigger events. It is time we begin to confront the true causes of what is going wrong. Even the origin of this condition is rarely acknowledged. This is the simple fact that we have been living through a period of more than a quarter of a century in which all our grand narratives have collapsed. One by one, the narratives we had were refuted, became unpopular to defend, or impossible to sustain. The explanations for our existence that used to be provided by religion went first, falling away from the 19th century onwards. Then over the last century, the secular hopes held out by all political ideologies began to follow in religion's wake. In the latter part of the 20th century, we entered the postmodern era, an era which defined itself and was defined by its suspicion towards all grand narratives. However, as all school children learn, nature abhors a vacuum. And into the postmodern vacuum, new ideas began to creep, with the intention of providing explanations and meanings of their own. It was inevitable that some pitch would be made for the deserted ground. People in wealthy Western democracies today could not simply remain the first people in recorded history to have absolutely no explanation for what we are doing here and no story to give life purpose. Whatever else they lacked, the grand narratives of the past at least gave life meaning. The question of what exactly we are meant to do now, other than get rich where we can and have whatever fun is on offer, was going to have to be answered by something. The answer that has presented itself in recent years is to engage in new battles, ever fiercer campaigns and ever more niche demands. To find meaning by waging a constant war against anybody who seems to be on the wrong side of a question which may itself have just been reframed and the answer to which has only just been altered. The unbelievable speed of this process has been principally caused by the fact that a handful of businesses in Silicon Valley now have the power not just to direct what most people in the world know, think, and say, but have a business model which has accurately been described as relying on finding customers ready to pay to modify someone else's behavior. Yet, although we are being aggravated by the tech world which is running faster than our legs are able to carry us to keep up with it, these wars are not being fought aimlessly. They are consistently being fought in a particular direction. And that direction has a purpose that is vast. The purpose of unknowing in some people, deliberate in others, is to embed a new metaphysics into our societies, a new religion, if you will. Although the foundations had been laid for several decades, it is only since the financial crash of 2008 that there has been a march into the mainstream of ideas that were previously known solely on the obscurest fringes of academia. The attraction of this new set of beliefs are obvious enough. It is not clear why a generation which cannot accumulate capital should have any great love of capitalism. And it isn't hard to work out why a generation who believe they may never own a home could be attracted to an ideological worldview which promises to sort out every iniquity, not just in their own lives, but every iniquity on earth. The interpretation of the world through the lens of social justice, identity group politics, and intersectionalism is probably the most audacious and comprehensive effort since the end of the Cold War at creating a new ideology. To date, social justice has run the furthest because it sounds, and in some versions, is attractive. Even the term itself is set up to be anti-oppositional. You're opposed to social justice? What do you want? Social injustice? Identity politics, meanwhile, has become the place where social justice finds its caucuses. It atomizes society into different interest groups according to sex, race, sexual preference, and more. It presumes that such characteristics are the main or only relevant attributes of their holders and that they bring with them some added bonus. For example, the assumption that there is a heightened moral knowledge that comes with being black or female or gay. It is the cause of the propensity of people to start questions or statements with speaking as a. And it is something that people both living and dead need to be on the right side of. It is why there are calls to pull down the statues of historical figures viewed as beings on the wrong side. And it is why the past needs to be rewritten for anyone who wished to save. It is why it has become perfectly normal for a Sinn Féin senator to claim that the IRA hunger strikers in 1981 were striking for gay rights. Identity politics is where minority groups are encouraged to simultaneously atomize, organize, and pronounce. The least attractive sounding of this trinity is the concept of intersectionality. This is the invitation to spend the rest of our lives attempting to work out each and every identity, vulnerability claim in ourselves and others, and then organize along whichever system of injustice emerges from the perpetually moving hierarchy which we uncover. It is a system that is not just unworkable but dementing, making demands that are impossible towards ends that are unachievable. But today, intersectionality has broken out from the social science departments of the liberal arts colleges from which it originated. It is now taken seriously by a generation of young people and, as we shall see, has become embedded via employment law in all the major corporations and governments. New heuristics have been required to force people to ingest the new presumptions. The speed at which they have been mainstreamed is staggering. As the mathematician and writer Eric Weinstein pointed out, and as a Google Books search shows, phrases like LGBTQ, white privilege, and transphobia went from not being used at all to becoming mainstream. As he wrote about the graph that results from this, the woke stuff that millennials and others are presently using to tear apart millennia of oppression and our civilization was all made up about 20 minutes ago. Hence he went on, while there is nothing wrong with trying out new ideas and phrases, you have to be pretty damn reckless to be leaning this hard on so many untested heuristics your parents came up with in untested fields that aren't even 50 years old. Similarly, Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt have pointed out how new the means of policing and enforcing these heuristics have become. Phrases like triggered and feeling unsafe and claims that words that do not fit the new religion cause harm only started to spike in usage from 2013 onwards. It is as though, having worked out what it wanted, the new metaphysics took a further half decade to work out how to intimidate its followers into the mainstream. But it has done so with huge success. The results can be seen in every day's news. It is behind the news that the American Psychological Association feels the need to advise its members on how to train harmful traditional masculinity out of boys and men. It is why a previously completely unknown programmer at Google, James Damore, can be sagged for writing a memo suggested that some jobs in tech appeal more to men than they do to women. And it is why the number of Americans who view racism as a big problem doubled between 2011 and 17. Having begun to view everything through the new lenses we have been provided with, everything is then weaponized with consequences which are deranged as well as dementing. It is why the New York Times decides to run a piece by a black author with the title, "Can My Children Be Friends with White People?" And why even a piece about cycling deaths in London written by a woman can be framed through the headline, "Roads Designed by Men Are Killing Women." Such rhetoric exacerbates any existing divisions and each time creates a number of new ones. And for what purpose? Rather than showing how we can all get along better, the lessons of the last decade appear to be exacerbating a sense that in fact we aren't very good at living with each other. Then finally we all stumbled baffled into the most uncharted territory of all. This was the claim that there lived among us a considerable number of people who were in the wrong bodies and that as a consequence what certainties remained in our societies needed to be utterly reframed. In some ways, the debate around the trans question is the most suggestive of all. Although the newest of the rights questions also affects by far the fewest number of people, it is nevertheless fought over with an almost unequal ferocity and rage. Women who have got on the wrong side of the issue have been hounded by people who used to be men. Parents who voice what was common belief until yesterday have their fitness to be parents questioned. In the UK and elsewhere, the police make calls on people who will not concede that men can be women and vice versa. Among the things these issues all have in common is that they have started as legitimate human rights campaigns. This is why they have come so far. But at some point, all went through the crash barrier. Not content with being equal, they have started to settle on unsustainable positions such as better. Some might counter that the aim is simply to spend a certain amount of time on Better in order to level the historical playing field. In the wake of the Me Too movement, it became common to hear such sentiments. As one CNN presenter said, there might be an overcorrection, but that's okay. We are due for a correction. To date, nobody has suggested when overcorrection might have been achieved or who might be trusted to announce it. What everyone does know are the things that people will be called if their foot even nicks against these freshly laid tripwires: bigot, homophobe, sexist, misogynist, racist, and transphobe are just for starters. The rights fights of our time have centered around these toxic and explosive issues. But in the process, these rights issues have moved from being a product of a system to being the foundations of a new one. To demonstrate affiliation with the system, people must prove their credentials and their commitment. How might somebody demonstrate virtue in this new world? By being anti-racist, clearly. By being an ally to LGBT people, obviously. By stressing how ardent your desire is, whether you are a man or a woman, to bring down the patriarchy.